Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. Now, we have no scheduled guest today. For some reason, there's a dial tone in the background there. I don't know. Anyway, we're trying to connect up Suzanne Peisel, and we'll get to it when we get to it. She'll probably message us or something, so just leave it be. Let me rant for a second, bro. Let me rant for a second. Right, because last night I was really depressed, you know. I know that kind of sounds really strange because I was happy and jovial and joking around and what have you, and we had so many laughs and good times on the show yesterday. And what's interesting is as I was editing yesterday's video and I saw myself and my guest smiling and laughing and generally having a good time, I didn't feel depressed anymore. And a realization hit me. When you're exposing yourself to people who are happy and healthy, laughing, and generally having a good time, it infects you. Not entirely dissimilar from how if you hang around with people who are incredibly depressing and black holes from which no light can escape, you get really depressed and down in the dumps, don't you? But, yeah, I thought that this was a profound realization for me, that I can actually cheer myself up by watching myself have a good time on the show. And I was listening to myself on the radio. And this kind of was starting to, like, flare up a bit of narcissistic streak in me. I was like, wow, I'm actually a talk radio show host. I mean, seriously, this is a strange sensation. Here I am, and people are listening to my voice. Who am I? You know what I'm saying? What do I have to contribute that's so important that necessitates a radio show? And I was just thinking, am I trying to justify my existence by ranting and raving and giving my own narrow opinion on things? I think the answer is probably yes. I am trying to justify my existence. I was just thinking about my father, who passed away about 3 years ago. And when I was a boy, I didn't really have much contact with him at all for the first 10 years. And then the next 17 years, virtually no contact at all whatsoever. Maybe once a year or something like that, he'd have dinner with a whole bunch of other people. So I never knew my father. I mean, really, I actually learned more about my father during the speeches people gave at his funeral than I did during my entire life. And my brother and my sisters, they knew him a lot longer than I did. And when the anniversary of his death comes around or the anniversary of his birthday, they're all like, oh, I've got such fond memories and I remember this and I remember what he taught me and what a good father he was. I don't share any of those memories at all. Like, at all. My brother and my sisters knew my father. I did not. And so when we talk about him on these anniversaries and I share all these memories, it's actually really, it puts me down in the dumps because there's no possibility that I'll ever get to know him. Never. He's gone. He's dead. And people tell me, oh, well, why didn't you contact him and blah, 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 blah. Says, I was a child. Why didn't my father try to contact me? And I think this is part of the reason why I've turned out the way that I have, because when you don't have a father, you purposely, as they say in Kill Bill 2, you purposely try to accumulate father figures, and I've got so many of them. My good friend Mikhail Pierce, who is my bandmate, he's like 50 plus, he's like one of my best friends. My friend Jono's a couple of years older than I. My good friend Jonathan Eisen from Uncensored Magazine. He's been a real good father figure to me. All of the activists and patriots and what have you that I associate within this movement, almost all of them are around about twice my age. And it's not the same, though. You know, it's almost like, despite the fact that you are appreciated by many honourable, decent, older men and father figures, you still can't get over that fact that your own father himself couldn't even be bothered getting to know you. Yeah. And that's something I'm going to have to carry with me for the rest of my life, because there's no way I can reconcile that. I can forgive and forget, perhaps, maybe, I don't know. It's kind of difficult to forget something that didn't happen. You know what I'm saying? if that's all you remember is nothing happening, how exactly do you forget that? How exactly do you forget the neglect? And this is something that has indeed affected all of humanity, and part of the agenda of the New World Order is to destroy families. And just like most boys who never knew their fathers, I have a criminal conviction. In fact, I got two for cannabis. I was really violent as a child, and I was always getting myself into trouble. I got suspended from high school 17 plus times. 17 times. Being stood down, suspended, coming this close to expulsion. You know what I'm saying? I was a really, really messed up kid. And now I'm actually still a very messed up man. I don't know how long it might take for me to build a bridge and get over it. But I understand that I'm not the only one that's been affected in this way. The other question is, if my family were so familiar with him and I'm not, why is it that I don't get on with my family quite so well? I mean, they're good people, they're intelligent and what have you. It's just, how many of your relatives, I mean, think about this seriously, how many of your relatives would you still be hanging out with, or would you hang out with at all, had they not shared common blood with you? You know, seriously, think about it. I was just wondering this myself last night, and the answer is probably none of them. Really. And that's a really sad, depressing thought. My sisters, whenever I see them, they're... It's almost like I'm still the little brother, you know? Like, they don't respect me. They don't listen to me. If I say things, even if I just basically open my mouth to say virtually anything, they get angry and after 60 seconds start yelling at me for absolutely no freaking good reason. And that's really depressing for me. Because I think that I've made good. I've made lemonade out of lemons. I've created a media platform. I've helped many people who were down in the dumps get back on their feet because I just showed them that I cared. I was just thinking about my good friend Russell Malcolm the other night, who was arrested for no reason, has his house taken off him, his business shut down by the cops because he was exposing corruption. And he was telling me how he couldn't open mail. He was so stressed and shaken by these experiences and all this legal documentation and jargon that he was being put through, that he was virtually having... He was about to die because of the stress he was suffering. And then I came along, got him to sit down in this very chair where I'm sitting now, and filmed him reading a 56-page dossier about his experiences. and I spent maybe 20 hours or so. Got to bed around 8 a.m. that a few weeks later, when I actually got around to editing it, cutting out all the little tiny pauses, little mistakes, repeats and things of that nature, and then put them up all on YouTube for them. And instead of being stressed to the point where his body's about to give out, where his mind cannot function, the next time I saw him, he seemed, instead of depressed, he seemed angry, like as if the life he had lived was suddenly being returned to him, and his power returned, his strength, and he wasn't sad anymore. He was motivated, he had energy, he had strength, and in no small way, I'm part of the cause of his revitalization. And I like to help people in such a way, because in the way that only I can. And the other day we had Paul Heinrich on the show, who was hog-tied, naked, beaten, and left in a cell for 2 days without food or water or a bathroom. And while we were talking about his experience, he had a great time even recalling it, because it's so painful and stressful. And after the interview, again, same with Russell, he felt a hell of a lot better, more motivated, because somebody actually cared, and cared enough to record it, and cared enough to promote it, and cared enough to put it out there. Cared enough to video it and edit the video well, so it's not just so freaking boring one camera angle the whole time. I think what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to do for others, strangers in a lot of ways, what was missing in my life, just having somebody around who really cared and was willing to go that extra mile to ensure that you knew it. My father may have cared about me, but I would never know it. You know? I think this is a good way of living your life, for lack of better circumstances. You know what I'm saying? If you can't right your own wrongs because that time is past and gone, it doesn't mean that you can't right wrongs at all. You can be there. You can help people. You can do the right thing. You can create things that do not exist. You can use your creativity and your heart to improve the lives of those around you. That is what this show is about. I want to improve your life, ladies and gentlemen, by helping you to understand things as I understand them. And I could, my understanding might be wrong, but at the end of the day, we do generally have a lot of fun with the guests on this show. We do laugh a decent amount, tell jokes and what have you. And that's something that is really sadly missing from a lot of our lives, isn't it? And I think that's why being a truther is really hard. Because everything's so freaking serious and painful, and you feel rejected a lot of the time, particularly by those closest to you, and you start to get angry with your fellow man, you start to hate everybody, you start to avoid people, you don't want to have stupid conversations with people that don't respect your ideas. You don't. You know, you avoid it like the plague. And I hope that I provide some relief for you. Maybe a little bit of therapy of some kind. As it is, also for myself, And I think that's what being a talk radio show host is about for me. I'm helping myself by helping others get their stories out, and helping you by helping you realize that not everything is dark and terrible and uber serious. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Uh-oh. Speedwaying rappers, but I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I
welcome
say
back.
Incredible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable and professional.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. You really will. Honestly. You know, just think about all the things that should drive you crazy. And it's not like the big things that happen to you that drive you nuts. It's the little things. Like your shoelaces becoming untied. Or that spot on that dish or that pan that just won't come off no matter how hard you clean it. The little malfunctions in your car that prevent your radio from working. All of these tiny little things that happen every day are slowly but surely driving us all frickin' mad. I say embrace the madness. Become one with the crazy person inside you. You can't avoid it. You can't beat it. You may as well join it. You know, you just think to yourself, I am crazy. That actually feels quite comfortable. I am nuts. I'm insane. Despite the fact that definitions of such don't really currently fit in society. Society probably thinks I am insane, but the reality is it's actually society that's nuts. Don't you think? You ever feel like you're the one person who's still alive in a horde full of dead zombies? It's closer to the truth than you might think. Isn't that sad? Think about it. And I think this is probably why zombie movies and The Walking Dead, so on and so forth, have become so popular lately. It's because this is how everybody feels. You know, you just want to do something constructive by going out and decapitating a few people that are lumbering along like they're doing nothing with their lives. And it's just the added benefit that, you're justified in exterminating them because, hey, they're already dead. And if you don't kill them, they'll eat you. But let's think about how we want society to run. Now, how do we want society to run in the collectivism? That phrase, and in and of itself, is a fallacy. There is no we. There is only you and me. There is no I in team. You know why? Because there is an I in individual, and teams are not about benefiting the individual. All right? That's the really strange thing about team sports, groupthink, collectivism, politics, voting in particular. You all get into this groupthink mentality. And we think that because we're thinking as a group and abandoning everything about us that is individual, that somehow we're going to make the world a better place. It's not true. The world will never be a better place so long as you never think about anything other than everybody else and what everybody else thinks. It's called conformity. It's called obedience. Even Matt Damon said the other day, I love Team America, it's so good. Said the other day that the problem society has is not civil disobedience, it's civil obedience. And he's right. Stop obeying. I mean, I don't know how long it took me to realize when I was working as a salesperson, how long it took me to realize that all the people that worked above me were scum, which is bad people without conscience. I don't know how long it took me to realize that I was getting paid so that I could be taken advantage of, so that they could make more money for themselves without having to do the work that I could do for them. You know? They just sit there creaming it while everybody else does all the work. That's collectivism. And I think that's the reason I physically can't actually go to a job interview or be employed anymore. All right? I suffer from a mental illness that I've made up by myself with zero scientific evidence, just like all the other mental illnesses. I'm not joking, by the way. All mental illnesses that are in the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, there's like they add a couple of hundred every year or something. Guess what scientific evidence they've got to verify every single one of those? What blood test? Anything? No? No. Not one. There's no evidence to suggest that any mental disorder even freaking exists. There's conditions. That's true. There's people who suffer from this, that, or the other, and they've got certain symptoms, but you can't actually blood test them and prove that they've got it. And you can't actually say that this person's got it and that person hasn't via a scientific verification process. It's all subjective opinion. For example, somebody who might be, dyslexic, bipolar, or ADD, or whatever, if you have a look at the other definitions for them, they're called creative geniuses, entrepreneurs, artists. And so instead of allowing them to recognize that they actually have all this creative potential, and the reason why they're actually not fitting in with society is because society doesn't foster and help to grow said creative potential, they drug you up, okay? They tried to drug me up, ADD medication. I walked the frack out of that doctor's office and I never even paid him $150 for the test he'd run on me, okay? I'm not mentally ill, not really. I think I'm perfectly sane. However, because of my previous experiences, bad experiences with employment, bad experiences with police, I'm now allergic to being employed. I'm now allergic to being roughed up by the cops. Something rises up in me that prevents me from tolerating it. No, I mean, even my best friend, Jono, gave me a job selling insulation. I went in, had a conversation with him, showed what I was going to do for the job, and then the night before going into work and doing door knocking and everything, I like had a panic attack sitting there lying in bed. You know, I couldn't catch my breath. That's how stressful even working for my best friend in an employment position is. You understand? I cannot, under any circumstances, ever be employed under somebody ever again. I'm an entrepreneur by my very nature. I come from a long line of entrepreneurs. And it's beneath me. My mother was once unemployed and my auntie told her, you need to go get a job packing bags at the supermarket. And Mum's like, no, I'm not doing that. And she goes, what, do you think packing bags at the supermarket is beneath you? She goes, well, yes. Yes, it is. Right? Working for other people, being a slave, is beneath me. I have too much creative potential, skills, and abilities to allow somebody else to exploit them. Not when I can use them any way I choose and help anyone I want. Okay? It's freaking beneath me to do otherwise. I don't think everybody's got the same experience as I have to teach you that very important lesson. Working for somebody who is less intelligent than you, has less integrity and less creativity, is beneath you. And I have a physical reaction when people are trying to get me to do things that are beneath me. A physical reaction. A panic attack. This is my pain, this is my suffering, this is my baggage. I don't know how to stop it. I don't know how to get rid of it. Even if I wanted to go back and be a slave and earn $2,000 a week-ish that I was earning before, even if I could do that, I wouldn't want to. I would prefer to be broke as a motherfracker and be free than have all the money in the world, but have somebody else determine what I can do with my time at all times. You see what I'm saying? You've got to sacrifice all of these creature comforts. You have to sacrifice the gilded cage so that you might spread your wings and fly. Don't do what people tell you. They're only telling you to do something because they're jealous of your own ability to outwit them, to be more creative. And they tell you, and this is the thing that really effed me off, they tell you to stop doing what you're doing if what you're doing is way better than they can do it. You know? They literally hold back the whole potential of humanity. I was watching a TEDx talk last night about disobedient thought. And the lecturer was coming, and he really hates parallel parking, but he was coming into town anyway, and there was a person in front of him with a trailer on her car, you know, and she probably came from the country, just like he did, car covered in crap. And there's one parallel parking space. They both saw it. She went for it first. And she tries to back in with a trailer to a parking space that only has one space for one car. And he's sitting there going, you fool. It's just never going to work. And so he's sitting there quite happy with the fact that he's about to get that parking space once she realizes that she can't fit. But then something very interesting happened. She got out of her car, unhitched the trailer, stood it on its end, and then parallel parked her car right in front of it. And it fit. That is what I'm talking about. Everybody else will be judging you, saying you can't do it, it's not possible, because they're not bright enough to figure it out for themselves how it can be done if you don't follow the rules. And this is what education, this is why I didn't like high school either. It's probably why I got suspended so many times. I was always trying to have fun and do things of my own accord, and that just didn't fit with the curriculum. It didn't help either that I was really fat and getting abuse. I remember when I was in Form 1 when I was 11 years old. 11 years old. There's 31 children in my classroom, and I think 29 of them gave me abuse all day, every day. Every day. You have any idea what it's like to be surrounded 29-1. The other one person wasn't even my friend. They just kept to themselves and didn't do anything. You know? Any idea what it's like to be outnumbered 29-1 by abusive little bastards every day you go to school and hating, having to even leave the home in the morning, thinking about killing yourself and actually getting out the scissors, having reviewed how to cut your wrist properly, and then instead using them to cut up a card or something like that. I can't remember what it was that I did, but I remember something my brother told me was, if you ever commit suicide, I ain't going to come to your funeral. I'll come after your funeral and I will piss on your grave for putting us all through that. And I've never even considered suicide again, because that was actually quite profound, my brother telling me that. Life really sucks. I don't think people have much of an inclination how badly life sucks, because they don't really think about it. I mean, think about it. You know, you go to your slave job, you're stuck in the slave traffic, listening to the slave radio, you've packed your slave lunch, you go into the slave building, your slave boss orders you around in your slave duties. Then when your slave duties are done for the day, you get back in your slave job car and you go back to your slave dwelling and you drink some slave beer and watch some slave television in order to prevent yourself from thinking about or thinking too much about how you're a slave. That's life for most people. And I see all this potential in the human condition, all this creative potential being squandered. It's not encouraged. It's something that is so painful for me to behold, to see my brothers and sisters that suffer this system that prevents you from being who you are, that tells you that you should act a certain way, that compels you if you don't want to anyway. You know what I'm saying? That really pisses me off. There's so much more we could be doing with ourselves than being a gosh dang slave, in my opinion. And I'm not going to say I could be wrong, because I'm not wrong. I'm right. And it's society that is wrong. It's the education system that is wrong. It is all of the people that have told you that you're not good enough that are wrong. You listen to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Well, there's only one thing I need. I got some so-called friends, they'll smile right to my face, all when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Who's that? Are you?
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about making sure that you're on the right side. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. On the side of freedom. On the side of integrity. On the side of just blatant honesty. I feel like I'm very honest on these radio broadcasts about who I am, the damaged individual that I've become. And it's, I don't know, maybe I've developed my narcissism because of the fact that I don't get appreciated, and so I'm forced by that to really appreciate myself and actually try to. But it's actually really, really hard, you know. And just remember, you know, there's nothing necessarily wrong with narcissists. I mean, Muhammad Ali, Bruce Lee, Steve Jobs, Albert Einstein, they're all narcissists. They're really brilliant at what they do. They weren't telling everybody they were best at what they did because they were full of themselves. They actually were. I'm really, really good at talking to people. I'm a really good talk radio show host. I'm a good filmmaker. I'm a decent man. And I feel very proud of that fact. Despite all the crap that I've been through, I've managed to maintain that kind of level of integrity within myself. And it's not easy. I mean, honestly, I could be a liar. I could be a deceiver. I could sell out, be a COINTELPRO op piece of crap. But I won't. Ever. Because I can't. I believe in myself. And I love myself too strongly to be somebody else's little wench. You know what I'm saying? And I think that this is part of the reason why I'm actually capable of doing this and doing it 5 days a week on this wonderful platform that the good people at American Freedom Radio give me, that our talented pro bono working board ops are still there doing it, you know? None of us are in it for the money, you know? If we were, there'd have to be something mentally wrong with us. You know what I'm saying? What are you trying to do? Live in poverty for the money? It's nuts, isn't it? I would like to help these board ops actually get some coin or whatever, and trying to sort out some advertisers for them and what have you. But you know, it's not easy because I don't like going after business opportunities and things of that nature. I prefer to just do what I'm doing and just hope, like, frack, that people appreciate it enough to donate something, you know? I just pray that people go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and click on that subscribe button so that they... Let's just say I'm recognised for the work that I do, the amount of work that I get accomplished when virtually nobody else in this country... Well, actually, no, not virtually. Nobody else in this country. Nobody. Full stop. There's 4 million New Zealanders in this country and a million abroad. Out of 5 million New Zealanders, there is only one that is a five-day-a-week talk radio show talking about this kind of material. You know, the truth. Scumbaggery. That kind of thing. I'm the only one. Now, I could be proud of that I've made myself into literally a historical figure, all right? Historically speaking, there's never been a New Zealander in all of the years that radio has been around that has an American-based talk radio show, okay? So technically, I'm doing something that is historical here. And it occurs to me, of course, that when I'm doing this job, it's not just myself that I'm doing it for. In fact, I'm really kind of not doing it for myself. It's not really a choice. It's a lack of options, as I like to say, because there's so much pain and frustration that is entailed with doing this kind of work. I mean, talk radio is not for the faint of heart. Most talk radio shows fail within the first year, so, in many cases within the first 6 months. People just can't hack it. It's really, really difficult to come up with something to talk about when you've got no material. And it occurs to me as well that the reason I'm doing this, or reason I'm capable of doing it, sorry, is because of the listeners. I mean, all of the guests that we have come on have basically been suggestions from listeners for the most part. And I'm really, really grateful for that because it's quite difficult. I mean, if you want to interview somebody different every day, you've got to find somebody different every day. And because I'm interviewing and editing every day, finding somebody is like virtually impossible. I don't have the time or the energy at the end of the night, you know. I'm going to bed 3 a.m. regularly, up late editing, posting archives, and so on and so forth. I don't have time to do accumulate guests and go to their websites and vet them and find out who I could have on the show today and so on and so forth. I don't have any of that ability, you know. I got too much responsibilities in order to do that. That's why I'm really grateful for the listeners to kind of like pick up where I'm slack. And in New Zealand, this is an incredibly important job that I've gotten myself into, and I am so appreciative to the good people that run the radio stations around the country that rebroadcast this program, like Rush FM, Dags FM, and Ifinity FM, so that I'm broadcasting from the South Island to the tip of the North Island. You know, this is something that I'm really, really grateful for, that people actually believe in me enough that they are willing to broadcast this program, because it's very controversial. Very controversial. There are so many reasons why people would not listen to this radio broadcast, because they switch off instantly, and they might even attack the radio station for even having these kind of ideas and thoughts on. And their bravery and their diligence of putting up with me, putting up with all that abuse and everything is extraordinary to me. Quite extraordinary. And at the same time, I get lots of spam and abuse and things like that. I've got a whole abuse folder on my computer. I just take screenshots of all this abuse that I get, and I don't know why I'm doing that per se. Maybe it's just to illustrate one day to people that I'm not having a fun time to a large degree while I'm doing this, you know? it's actually quite painful. I actually have to suffer and go through a lot of stress just in order to keep doing what I'm doing. A lot of false accusations. Like, I got this one this morning from Lozmon, L-O-Z-Z-M-O-N, on YouTube. What did he say to me? He said, you're a plant, Vinny. I don't know when they turned you, but asking for donations with all the BS you just said, that's low. You know what you've done. Why would I ask for donations if I'm bought and paid for? See, it's not only the fact that I have to deal with this abuse, but with the fact that none of it is true. Okay? I remember when I was a kid in high school, I got suspended one time because somebody lied about me. You know, we were having a conversation. Even back then, I was a really deep thinker as a kid. And we were outside on the picnic table outside the seventh form common room, and we were having a discussion with a South African, a Maori girl, and myself. And I was talking about racism, and I wondered what racism actually is. You know, how do different races express their racism of other races? And I made the point that what Caucasians do is they often make jokes about other races in order to belittle them. And the Māori girl, I think her name was Rangatoa, she asked me, okay, what's an example of that? And I go, okay, what do you call a Māori on a clothesline? A Māori go round. And the South African guy laughed. The Māori girl and I didn't. And the very next day, I was called into the deputy principal's office. And they said that I'd been racist and that I'd said Māoris were all bums and things of this nature, none of which was true. You can't even have a conversation, an honest conversation about what racism is without the person, and Rangatoa was the person who reported me, lying, literally lying. Because I had tried to have an honest conversation about what racism was and actually tried to illustrate my point with some form of honesty. And what was really strange about that is the other person at the table agreed that I had been racist and agreed that I had said those things. And I was just blown away. It's like, you were there. You heard exactly what I said. And I got suspended for 2 days for that. 2 days for having an honest conversation about what racism is. You know? And it's like my entire life story, basically. I'm the only one who's not afraid to say the truth, to actually speak honestly, to go where others fear to tread. And as a direct result, people lie about me and try and attack me and defame me and destroy my life. Because they don't like honesty. They don't like integrity. They don't like thinking deeply. Well, frack you, Rangatoa. Frack you. Frack all of you people. I mean, seriously. You want to come and criticize me? Go right up, frack ahead. Okay? I can take it. I'll be right back after the show. Don't you go in the box. We'll be right back.